the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Start your engines. This is the Chasing Checkers Podcast with Chase McCain on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Rev them up. Welcome in. Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Online at thegamenashville.com. On the Game Nashville app, iTunes, rate, subscribe, review. Welcome in. Daytona 500 in the books. The 2019 NASCAR season is officially underway as they head to the Atlanta Motor Speedway this weekend. I am Chase McCabe. Glad you're with us. And huge show coming up. A lot of guests on today's show, but I think you'll like it. Kurt Busch coming up in the next segment. Larry McReynolds at the bottom of the hour as well. That is our show this week. It's going to be huge. Working on some stuff for next week as well as we get this season underway. But Denny Hamlin wins the 61st running of the Great American Race. And I will say this, and it'll be cool to get a driver's perspective and a crew chief and analyst perspective as well with Kurt and Larry. But I thought the racing was awesome. Yeah, there were a lot of wrecks, probably more than you would actually want, but that's a part of it. That's a part of restrictor plate racing. You expect that when you go to Daytona and Talladega. But I thought, you know, with all the lead changes that they had and you had different guys leading the race, you know, how about Matt DiBenedetto? He was on the very first episode of Chasing Checkers. And as a guy that is now with Levine Family Racing, takes over for Casey Kane, they enter into a partnership with Joe Gibbs Racing, similar to the one that Furniture Row had. They take a shot on Matt DiBenedetto, who is a guy that a lot of the drivers, a lot of the experts have been raving about, that this guy has talent, and he goes and he leads a ton of laps in the Daytona 500, unfortunately gets caught up in a wreck, caught up with Regan Smith when he got wrecked from Fox NASCAR, and just Matt DiBenedetto, just an awesome guy.
Just a racing deal, you know, not anything intentional. I talked to Paul there. I think he was trying to get to my outside, clip my right rear. Just racing hard. So here's first time that I've seen it there. It looks like he just barely got to my right rear. Just was trying to push, maybe get to my outside. But I was focused on trying to help my Toyota teammates. I hope they can pull it off. But man, like you said, this was it was the most fun speedway event I've ever had in my life. Being able to lead, do some incredible things. I have obviously an amazing team. People can see what we're doing here. It's neat to be a part of Toyota. Have Procore as a sponsor. I mean, all these guys, Levine Family Racing, Toyota, they all took a heck of a chance on me, man. And glad we proved what we're here to do. And I'm I'm very, very heartbroken, but appreciative to be here. Thank you so much to all the fans for all the support, and it's just the beginning. So,
I think Matt DiBenedetto, and that's from Fox NASCAR, I feel like he's probably going to win a race. I mean, he's in great equipment. Now, look, it's Daytona, but with this new rules package, you're going to have some of the same things that we see in plate racing. Maybe not the pack racing, but you'll have passing with the tapered spacers. We'll find out more this weekend in Atlanta. But DiBenedetto, man, it's a heck of a run. Heck of a story. Really, really cool that he was able to have that type of run. And you've seen him work his way up. I mean, he's getting in equipment that, you know, is decent now, especially getting cars from Gibbs. So, really cool stuff from him. But Denny Hamlin, watching that race, watching everything unfold, knowing the storyline surrounding Gibbs, with J.D. Gibbs passing away about a month ago, son of Joe Gibbs. He's the listed owner on the 11 car, Denny Hamlin. It just all felt right. When you saw that 11 car out front at the end of the race, Kyle Busch behind him, and then Eric Jones, they go 1-2-3. Truex had gotten wrecked out. It felt right. And, you know, pulling for a Gibbs car to win is one thing. But for it to be the car that JD is listed as the owner of, they go to the white paint scheme, which was the original paint scheme. You know, I just think all was right. And the thing that really stood out to me was the emotional interview that Vince Welch did after the race with Joe Gibbs. Gibbs is walking down pit road, headed to victory lane. You can tell that the emotion's getting to him. Here's Coach Gibbs with Vince Welch after the race.
Well, Coach, we were talking a few moments ago, and you said, just as long as one of them won, you finished 1, 2, 3. Can't get much better than that.
I got to tell you, what happened right here, JD's name is on that car. That's his number 11 with Denny. He found Denny. I'm just saying, what happened here is emotional for all of us, the family. This is Jackson. Denny racing like he did right there is just unbelievable. I'm emotionally shot. This is
what's it mean, Joe? That
grandkids here. I'm just saying, what happened here is really unreal, and I'm just thrilled. I think JD had the best view of everything. It's really an unbelievable experience. I don't know how to put it in any other words. I just thank the Lord for letting us be a part of this. Yeah. And I hope JD, I hope people will go to JDGibbsLegacy.com and see that video. I think it could be life-changing for them.
Congratulations, Joe.
You can hear it in his voice, the emotion. I mean, I don't think it hit completely set in. But this is a father that had to bury his son. I can't imagine. And for anyone listening out there that has gone through that, I mean, my prayer is with you, because I just can't imagine. And Coach Gibbs is walking down pit road, going to victory lane to see his driver, Denny Hamlin, that his son found in the car that his son owned. The number 11 was JD's number. And just gets to experience that. That's what's so cool about this sport. I mean, it happens in other sports, but just the family aspect of everything was so cool. And to see that emotion with Coach Gibbs, I mean, it got to you. I was standing on the set at Fox 17, about to do TV with Dave Foster, and we both were just like, wow, this, you can't write a better script. This is the way it should be. And just congratulations to Coach. You know, I don't get starstruck a lot, but my first time at Daytona for the 500, I'd been there for the 400 miler, but for the 500, I'm walking through the garage and I see Coach Gibbs. And I was like, I have to go say hi. I have to introduce myself. And I did. And he posed for a picture. And I'm like, this is a NASCAR champion, Super Bowl champion, just a good guy, a good Christian guy, and just a rock star. Humble as can be, and to see him be able to win the Great American Race with Denny Hamlin, pretty cool. Here is Hamlin right after the win. He gets out of the race car. He does the Fox has started doing it now, but the just right after the race interview with Jamie Little from Fox.
Denny, all of these fans have stood here for a long time waiting to see this moment, but you just pointed at that sticker. What does J.D. Gibbs mean to you in this event?
The whole family. They've done so much for me over the course of my career. It's just this one's for J.D. We're desperately going to miss him the rest of our lives, but his legacy still lives on through Joe Gibbs Racing, and proud to do this for them.
Once again, a brand new crew chief here at Daytona, and Chris Gabehart. You guys worked together in the Xfinity Series back in the day. What was it about him that you knew and you believed that you guys could do this and get you back to winning?
He's a short track racer. That's what I love about him. He's just got that short track mentality, same as Wheels. And Wheels car ran pretty damn good today too. So it's just amazing to be in this position. Thank FedEx, Toyota, all these partners, Coca-Cola, the Jordan brand, Monster Energy, everyone who put this car on the racetrack. This is amazing. I don't want to tear this one up because I want to put it back in my house.
Denny, not a lot of people get a chance to do it a second time, and you always think, if I had that chance again, what would you do differently? What's going to be different about this celebration?
I don't know. I'm just going to enjoy it more. I mean, I think I was so dumbfounded about everything that happened in the first time with the photo finish and everything. This one lets me soak it in a little bit more. I'm going to have a terrible hangover tomorrow, but I'm going to enjoy it the rest of my life.
How about party with the fans?
Love it.
Denny Hamlin with Jamie Little on Fox after he won his second Daytona 500. And yeah, I think that party was probably pretty sweet. And he's a guy that you look at him and he's probably the best driver on the circuit right now without a championship. Kyle Busch has one. Truex has one. Logano, Keselowski, obviously Johnson. He might be the best one without a title. And look, he could have started the process to winning one. Kyle Busch finishes second. I mentioned that it was a 1-2-3 finish for Gibbs. And Kyle Busch, after the race, as you can imagine, a little disappointed.
Kyle Busch has won everything at Daytona except the 500, and you were right there. You made a deal with your teammate Denny Hamlin for that last restart. Was that the difference? Would you do it a different second time around?
I don't know. Strengths in numbers. You know, we're trying to at least protect one of our cars being able to get to victory lane, and I felt like we were able to do that with being able to do what we did on that last restart. But overall, it's you know, certainly bittersweet. You know, it's awesome to see a JGR car in victory lane for Joe and JD and everything that's kind of gone on this offseason with all of that. But it's very, very bittersweet for everybody at M&M's and Interstate Batteries and Skittles and Snickers and all those that support us and all my team guys that work so hard to try to get to victory lane for us and trying to get our Daytona 500 victory. You know, he's got two, I got none, but that's a part of it sometimes, and we just have to move on and go to next time.
You seemed apprehensive to go along with that plan when it was presented to you. In hindsight, do you wish you'd have just raced it out like you had the time before?
Yes and no. I mean, again, trying to make sure at least one of us got to victory lane is first and foremost, and you know, after that you try to go race it out and see what you can do for yourself and for your team. But you know, there wasn't enough cars out there, really. I mean, there were six cars running at the end. I don't know that anything would have been any different, really, if anything would have materialized. I think we all would have just been stuck side by side, given if I would have been on the outside or something like that. So it's so hard to tell. I don't know how it would have played out, but I'm not going to worry about it.
Thanks, Kyle.
Kyle Busch finishes second in the Great American Race, and you can imagine, bittersweet, but, you know, he still wants that Daytona 500. Eric Jones comes home third, Joey Logano fourth. Michael McDowell, great run for him in fifth. Ty Dillon in sixth. Kyle Larson in seventh. Ryan Preece, the rookie, eighth. Jimmy Johnson, ninth. And Ross Chastain rounds out the top 10. Quite the race. Crazy. But now we move on to Atlanta. And when we come back here on Chasing Checkers, Kurt Busch, the driver of the number one Monster Energy Chevy, will join us. It's Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN. 102.5 The Game. We're back on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game, online at thegamenashville.com. I'm Chase McCabe, and pleased to be joined by the 2004 Cup Series champion, Kurt Busch, is on the line with us. Kurt, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I kind of get into the racing part of things, I wanted to start with something that I saw during the broadcast on Sunday during the Daytona 500 that you're doing, and it just speaks to you and who you are as a person, but you are giving away 100 tickets for military members and their families for every race this season. Discuss that a little bit and what went into that decision and for you to do that.
For me, I've always been inspired and moved by our military. I've been to Walter Reed Medical Center. I've been to San Antonio's hospital where a lot of the burn victims from different wars and battles get sent to. And you know, when I'm there in the rehab room with them, you know, they're like, well, why are you here? I said, well, because you're my inspiration. And then it perks them up, and it helps them, you know, get through rehab and bounce back into its regular civilian life. And, you know, for this ticket giveaway, it's a chance to put a smile on their faces and the families that have gone through so much. And each and every race, yeah, 100 tickets. And it's easy for the veterans to go to vettix.org. Because they were going there already for like NBA tickets or baseball, football, and I wanted to make sure NASCAR was a link that they could click on and come out to the races. So it's my pleasure to donate 100 tickets every race.
Well, it's very cool. My best friend since I was 6 years old is serving in South Korea right now, so stuff like that is near and dear to my heart. So very, very cool on you and what you're doing for the veterans and for military families.
Oh, thank you. It's easy to do, and man, I heard there was 3,200 requests for those little 100 tickets for the Daytona 500. But, you know, hopefully, like this weekend, Atlanta, the Quick Trip 500, hopefully, you know, there's going to be that big rush to get them to the track as well.
Very cool. He is Kurt Busch, driver of the number one Monster Energy Chevrolet for Chip Ganassi Racing. And the Daytona 500 this past weekend, I know it did not go the way that you wanted it to, but what exactly happened? I know Ricky Stenhouse was behind you, and was this just one of those racing deals?
It was pretty sad. In all honesty, I made a mistake of assuming Ricky was going to let me back in line with that draft, and I was 99% clear. And I needed him to give that 1%, and he did not. And it's my fault for trying to assume and putting trust in another racer to let you back in the drafting lane. But things were shaping up to get hot and heavy for that stage break, and we were trying to position ourselves to get some points. And, I never expected that to happen from Ricky. But, you know, it happens, and we got to move forward, look at Atlanta, Vegas, and get on down with the regular season now.
Well, Kurt, I got good news for you. You don't have to worry about restrictor plate racing again because that's going away. I don't know if you're going to take the plate out of your car and frame it or something to remember it, but you don't have to worry about that. However, this new rules package, I know there's a lot of unknowns with it, the tapered spacer and things like that. What are you expecting from at Atlanta this weekend with this new rules package?
It's going to be like drafting from Daytona Talladega at the mile-and-a-half track. So it's going to be big packs early on, and then we'll see who's able to hold it wide open the longest with the tire wear. Atlanta really chews up the tires. It's going to be fun to experience the whole new package. And then we go to Vegas, which that track doesn't chew up the tires as much. And so we'll see how that plays out at that mile and a half. So lots of newness going on with NASCAR right now.
And I'll give NASCAR a lot of credit because they have been trying to do things to make the racing better, to, you know, get fans to the track and watch on TV and however they want to take in the race. How is this going to improve the racing moving forward with this at every track?
That's the big question. You know, I'm expecting big packs. You know, if one guy makes one small mistake, you might see a 15-car pileup, which is not good. But, you know, we're going to be more intense, and everything is going to have much higher consequences is what I'm anticipating with the draft. And so we'll see how it plays out. A lot of lingering questions still to be answered.
He's Kurt Busch on the line with us. Now, last time I talked to you, you had not announced your plans for this season. You were still in the planning stages, but then in the off season, you announced that you were moving to Chip Ganassi Racing. Why was that the right fit for you at this point in your career?
I was looking for a little bit of respect in the racing contract that I was looking to sign, and Chip Ganassi gave that to me in a quick 30-minute discussion over a cup of coffee, even though I'm sponsored by Monster Energy. But, you know, we had a 30-minute chat, and he's like, yeah, this is what I want from you. And I said, this is what I would like from you. He goes, yeah, done. Let's do it. And over at SHR, it took 6 months to kind of banter back and forth just to even get things going. So it was just a good vibe. Good energy all the way around with Ganassi. Kyle Larson is a young, up-and-coming driver that I think is a huge talent. And it's going to be fun to work with him and share my experience with him.
Well, and you've gone through this the last two seasons of being on a one-year deal with SHR, and you ultimately went back to them last season, and now you had to go through it all again. Has that been weighing on you of having to go through these contract negotiations the last few years?
Yeah, it's a little awkward, but at the end of the day, I've got a great sponsor with Monster Energy. It's been so much fun to work with them and to be a brand representative in the NASCAR arena for them. And that enabled me to make these types of decisions. And so that's where, you know, I might have had a little bit more leverage. And that's what Ganassi saw, and that's why we're together now.
And you mentioned Monster Energy, and you've had a long partnership with them, going back for when you raced with your brother at Kyle Busch Motorsports. But how important was it to you to be able to continue that relationship with Monster?
It's awesome. I just love the lifestyle, the brand, and being with them. You know, it's cool. I mean, you never know. Like Supercross, they'll call me up and say, hey, we need you over here. Or, you know, hey, guys, can I get tickets to the X Games? Hey, MotoGP, Formula One. There are Monsters involved in every facet of motorsport, and it's really neat to be that brand representative, like I said, out on the NASCAR circuit. And you know, whether we're racing in the Northeast or Atlanta this weekend, in the Midwest, Monsters out there everywhere on the side of my car. It's pretty sweet.
Kurt, you've been quoted in saying that now that you enter your 20th season in NASCAR, that 20, that's a good number, that you like that number. You're 40 years old now. You signed this new deal. I don't know why us media folk always have to ask this question to a driver when he hits the 40s, but how much longer do you plan on doing this? I mean, do you see yourself racing, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, or have you really put a number on it?
The biggest key factor is just having a chance to win and running up front, enjoying going to the track and the challenge of racing with the best of the best. And right now I've got an awesome team that puts me in quality cars. And as long as all that continues, you know, and my wife supports it, and that's what we want to do together, then we'll keep going. But you never know. There's things out there that I want to do on a racing bucket list, like the 24 Hours of Le Mans, or a race in Australia that's called the Bathurst 1000. There's all kinds of races I want to do around the world. And with the NASCAR schedule, though, it's pretty tight. We're out there for 38 race weekends, and it really books up your life. So, I don't know. We're having fun. We'll see how things progress, and I'll have more understanding of it once we get into the summer months and where things will go.
Well, awesome, and I appreciate you taking the time. Best of luck with Atlanta this weekend, but also I want to mention that I'm going to Las Vegas to the race, first time out there, first time in Vegas here in a couple weeks. What can I expect just as a fan from the racing at Las Vegas?
Well, you better bring that restrictor plate with you if it's your first time in Vegas. You got to pump the brakes a little bit out there. It's going to be pretty busy for you. Yeah, it'll be a fun race. You'll enjoy it. You know, just try to get in bed at a decent hour.
I will. And Kurt, best of luck this weekend in Atlanta and moving forward. Thanks for taking the time.
All right, you got it. Thank you.
I think that is some sound advice from Kurt Busch. I probably need to get a lot of sleep before race day, but appreciate him taking the time, the second time with us on Chasing Checkers, and he's just a good guy to deal with and heck of a racer. You know, I think he was one that everybody was looking at, didn't know how the first race with Ganassi would go, but somebody that could be a contender. But I look for him to win in that one car because I think Ganassi is a team that is definitely on their way up with Kyle Larson, as he mentioned. So he is one to watch out. When we come back here on Chasing Checkers, we're gonna ask a crew chief what he thinks about the new rules package. And this is a smart guy that has been around the sport for a long time. Larry McReynolds from Fox Sports. He joins us next. Chasing Checkers, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. And I told you that this was going to be a star-studded show. We had Kurt Busch in the last segment. And now we say hello to Fox NASCAR analyst and former crew chief Larry McReynolds. Larry Mack, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hard to believe Daytona's behind us, and now here we are in Atlanta this weekend, and the 2019 NASCAR season is off and running.
And it's awesome. And before we get into Daytona and Atlanta and everything going on, I did want to bring something up. I've known Liz Allison and her family for a long time, and I know that she has been working and praying and hoping that one day that day would come, that Davey Allison is a Hall of Famer. And that day did come, and I know it was special for you as well, being his longtime crew chief. But what was that whole ceremony and that moment like for you as his friend and former crew chief?
Yeah, my wife Linda and I, of course, we obviously attended, and it was very emotional. And you know, Liz and I have had numerous conversations over the last few years about Davey getting into the Hall of Fame, and I know she was getting a little bit discouraged, but I told her, I said, I know we all want him in there, and we all want him in there now, but just be patient. He will get in. Yeah, in the perfect world, I would have loved to have seen him and Robert Yates go in together. Robert, of course, was inducted last year. But you know what? The good news is he's in. Knowing Davey Allison, working with Davey Allison, being a friend of Davey Allison, long before there ever was a NASCAR Hall of Fame, there was never a doubt in my mind that Davey Allison was a Hall of Famer. Because to me, a Hall of Famer, yeah, it's about numbers, but it's also about contributions to the sport. And Davey Allison contributed so much to our sport. A lot like his dad, he understood that the most important element of our sport is our race fans. And, yeah, it was a very proud moment to see Robbie Allison go up there and introduce his dad as a NASCAR Hall of Famer. Just a very emotional night, but very, very happy to see him now in this NASCAR Hall of Fame.
And it was quite the class, too. Not just Davey, but you had Alan Kulwicki and Roger Penske, Jeff Gordon in there, and just a really cool class to go in this year to start off the season.
Well, and this is the 10th class to be inducted. And this is the first class where all five of these gentlemen competed against each other. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, Allen and Davey losing their lives in 1993, which was Jeff Gordon's rookie season. They didn't compete against each other a lot, but they did compete against each other. And, of course, all three of these drivers competed against race teams and drivers that drove for Roger Penske and Jack Roush. If Davey could not be inducted with Robert Yates, I think it was very fitting that he was inducted with Alan Kowicki, two guys that raced each other hard, along with Bill Elliott for that championship in 1992. And, you know, unfortunately, we're just in a few months of one another. Allen in April of 93, Davey in July of 1993, unfortunately, in aviation accidents, lost their lives.
He is Larry McReynolds, analyst for Fox NASCAR, Fox Sports, of course. And Larry, I've been a race fan for a long time, and now I'm lucky enough to be able to talk about it on the radio and cover it. And watching the Daytona 500, I loved the racing. Yeah, there were a ton of wrecks, and I know that the drivers, that's a headache for them. Restrictor plate racing, that's the game in which they play or played now that the plate is going away. But I thought it was a great race. I thought that the side-by-side, that's what the fans wanted to see. What were your takeaways from the 500?
Yeah, I think we were all a little nervous, Chase, going into the 500 last Sunday morning because of what we had seen in the Clash the week before, the dual races the Thursday night before the 500, and even the Xfinity Series race on Saturday. I think we were a little concerned that we were not seeing a lot of two and three wide. We were seeing a lot of single file. But as I pointed out in the early part of our broadcast last Sunday, that this field was double the size of the field in the Clash or either one of the dual races, 40 drivers out there last Sunday, and that now the stakes were high. It was a chance to win the Daytona 500 from the drop of the green flag. They were two wide, three wide. Yeah, I never want to see race cars get torn up, but I still believe if you're a NASCAR fan, you got everything you were looking for, and just the whole storyline behind Denny Hamlin and Joe Gibbs Racing, the 11 number,
yeah.
J.D. Gibbs, Joe's son, that lost his battle with a very harsh disease, and just the storylines there. And I think everybody, no matter what angle you looked at that race, you certainly got what you were looking for. It was really an awesome Daytona 500 in many, many ways and many, many storylines.
So they moved to Atlanta this weekend, and we don't really know what to expect with these new rules. They're going to this new aero package that they will run for the rest of the season in every race. And this is one reason why I wanted to talk to a crew chief, because there are a lot of things that I don't necessarily understand, and I think a lot of fans don't understand either, of what exactly this rules package is designed to do. But from what I do gather, it's going to make the racing better.
Well, NASCAR's goal with this high drag package, a lot of downforce, a little bit less horsepower. And, of course, we did race a very similar package, Chase, at the All-Star race
right.
last May back at Charlotte Motor Speedway. The difference in this package versus that package, they're going to have about 100 more horsepower, which there's no doubt in my mind from the get-go watching practice last May, that was my knee-jerk reaction. We need a little more power, and that's certainly what we've got. And it will be done not with a restrictor plate like we did at the All-Star race. It will be done with a tapered spacer that still restricts air, but the drivers like the tapered spacer. We've actually been racing a tapered spacer, a little bit bigger size, at all of our tracks except Daytona and Talladega for the last two or three years. It has more throttle response. In other words, if a driver rolls out of the throttle and gets back in it, it has better throttle response than what you have with restrictor plate. But NASCAR's goal was not to have big packs of racing like we have at Daytona and Talladega. That's not going to happen. But it's to create more passing. This pokes a much bigger hole in the air. You almost have to think about it almost like the truck series. It has a lot of drag. It has a lot of downforce. And it's down on power. And honestly, Chase, week in and week out, some of the best racing we've had over the last few years has been the truck race. And I think we could go closer to what you see with the truck series, in that when a driver catches another driver and his car is driving better because the lead car is poking a much bigger hole in the air, that driver behind should be able to go ahead and complete the pass. That's the goal, is to create more passing, not necessarily to have a big pack of racing like we have at Daytona and Talladega.
So my understanding is it's going to put a lot more control on with the driver, and the driver is going to have to actually drive the race car a little bit more with certain aspects of how things go in the race. Are you expecting that to benefit certain guys more than the others, or are we going to see more of an even playing field?
Well, I've always said, Chase, no matter what rules package we have, no matter what aero package, no matter what, the cream is still going to rise to the top. You know, Stuart Haas Racing, Team Penske, Joe Gibbs Racing, they're still going to be the guys you have to beat week in and week out. And it's not going to take a team that struggles to find a top 15 finish and all of a sudden have them up there door handle to door handle for the win. The cream's still going to rise to the top. But I do think the gap will close a little bit just because the cars will have a lot more downforce and they will be down on power. And I know the fans have been a little bit anti, wait a minute, racing's about making a lot of horsepower. But you know what? You don't have to have a lot of horsepower, and the speeds don't have to be 200 miles per hour to have good racing. Actually, the racing will be better if they're at 170 and 180 miles per hour. These cars, with the downforce they have, when you start getting up to 200 miles an hour, they're not racing. They're just hanging on. And I promise you, when they get out there in a big pack, 40 cars racing, I challenge you to tell me if they're running 170 or 210. All I care about is that we have good racing. The racing we've had has not been bad. I mean, we had 12 different winners last year. But I think we all know, as an industry, we can always make things better, and that's certainly what they're trying to do here.
When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Larry McReynolds from Fox NASCAR. The cream rising to the crop. There's one driver in particular I want to ask him about. That's all next. Chasing Checkers on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe here with you, talking with Fox NASCAR analyst Larry McReynolds. Larry, you mentioned with the new rules package and the cream rising to the top, one driver that has always risen to the top is Jimmy Johnson, the seven-time champion. And I know he had a rough speed weeks, but going into Atlanta, a track that he's pretty good at, what do you see out of Jimmy Johnson going into this season in particular?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, I think, what a lot of people have their eyeballs on, because it was a very dismal 2018. The first time Jimmy Johnson, not only the first time he had a winless season in his Cup career, it's the first time he didn't win multiple races. And just, you know, but across the board, other than Chase Elliott, it was kind of a dismal year for Hendrick Motorsports across the board. It was certainly not the year that Chevrolet was looking for. They only won four races last year, Austin Dillon, the Daytona 500, and then the three races that Chase Elliott won. But I do think that this aero package may help the Chevrolet camp. I do think this aero package may help Jimmy Johnson. And we certainly know Atlanta is a good racetrack for him. He's the only driver to have more than one win at Atlanta in the last 10 trips that we've been there. And I think that's something, you know, because what happened at Daytona, whether you ran well or whether you ran bad, it's not relative. Slide it aside. And now we move to Atlanta because things are so different at Atlanta, rules package, track-wise, and everything. But I do think that's one of the big storylines going into 2019. Jimmy Johnson, for the first time in his career, he does not have Chad Knaus as his crew chief. Chad Knaus is now over there with William Byron, which they obviously set on the pole for the Daytona 500. And now Kevin Mendering, coming from Junior Motorsports, a rookie crew chief in the Cup, is with Jimmy Johnson. But that may be exactly what Jimmy Johnson needed, is kind of a fresh start with a new crew chief. And Rick Hendrick obviously felt like that they would be good paired together. So, you know, we're going to start watching that closely this weekend right here in Atlanta.
Yeah, and you mentioned Atlanta. That's a track that has always been one of the fastest in NASCAR. And I know that, you know, Kurt Busch, when I talked to him earlier, that he, you know, there's a ton of unknowns with how things are going to be with this new rules package. But the track is still the same. Anyone besides Johnson stand out to you going into this weekend?
Oh, yeah, Kevin Harvick. I know he only has the two wins there. That first win, and a very emotional win back in spring of 2001, just a few short weeks after we lost Dale Earnhardt, and then a very dominating win a year ago there, which started a run of three consecutive wins for Kevin. He's led the most laps in the last five races there, dominated the race 2 years ago, and unfortunately had a very late race pit road speeding penalty and could only recover to finish ninth. But the thing we love about Atlanta, it's fast, but it's one of the oldest surfaces that we race on. And the groove moves around from the bottom to the middle to right up against the wall in the top, and it can be different in one end of the racetrack, even to the other end. The car start sliding around, the drivers are searching around, and you think about some of the finishes we've had there, going all the way back to 2000 with Bobby Labonte and Dale Earnhardt Sr., 2001, Kevin Harvick, Jeff Gordon, 2005, Carl Edwards, Jimmy Johnson. We have had some amazing finishes there, but the drivers love this track because it is old and abrasive and wore out, and you start sliding around, and you talked about drivers more in control. That's where a driver really shines, is when these cars start sliding around and they have to start moving around looking for more grip on the racetrack.
Larry, I ask a lot of people that have been around the sport for a long time this question, and you know, we obviously, as a city here in Nashville, we're growing, and every day getting different events, and there's been a lot of talk about the Fairgrounds Speedway and NASCAR possibly returning there. They have a deal in place with the Bruton Smith and that group, that that SMI. What would you think about NASCAR coming back to the Fairgrounds, the old short track?
I think it belongs there. Now, am I willing to bang the gavel and say we need to bring the Cup Series there for a points race? You know, let's crawl before we walk and walk yeah. before we run. I think it would be amazing to bring either the Truck Series and or the Xfinity Series back there. I think the trucks would put a great show on there. Let's see how things go with that. And then maybe look at a special event for the Cup Series. Maybe it's time to move the All-Star Race. You know, I know the All-Star Race, ever since its very first time to run it back in 1985, it's always been at Charlotte Motor Speedway, except for 86. We did go to Atlanta Motor Speedway with it. I know Charlotte is kind of the home of the All-Star Race, but I think to maybe bring the All-Star Race to Nashville, maybe a midweek primetime race, I think that would be well receptive. But I would love to see the trucks and or the Xfinity Series come there. Let's get our feet wet. Let's bring NASCAR back to Nashville and see where it goes from there.
Larry, I want to end on this because you mentioned Dale Earnhardt earlier. 18 years ago Monday, we lost Dale Earnhardt. And I know that's a day you remember, you were in the booth, but I want to take you back a few years earlier when you were the crew chief atop his pit box, calling him home to his one and only Daytona 500 win. What that moment was like for you, it was your second win in the Great American Race, but being able to help him get his first, what that meant.
Yeah, I mean, obviously both of my Daytona 500 wins are very special considering who they were with. 1992 with Davey Allison, and then 6 years later, to your point, with Dale Earnhardt, two guys that loved racing at Daytona and Talladega, our two restrictor plate tracks, and it was their only win. And, of course, those two drivers are no longer with us. Those two trophies sit right here in my office. There's not a day goes by that I don't walk by them and look at them and smile. I think what meant the most to me in the moment that I'll never forget in 1998, Chase, was things had kind of settled down. We'd been in victory lane for, you know, 30 or 45 minutes, pictures still being taken, everybody still celebrating. But what I did is kind of took a step back and just watched Dale and Teresa Earnhardt, and quite honestly, Richard and Judy Childress. You know, Richard had been going there for you know, 30 plus years as a driver at one time and as an owner, and they had never won the Daytona 500, and neither had a lot of the team members on that three car at Richard Childress Racing. But I just kind of took a step back and just kind of watched the moment. And it was almost, it reminded me a little bit of watching your kids open presents on Christmas morning. And it's a moment I'll never, ever forget, just seeing how much it meant to all of those individuals, but especially Dale Earnhardt. He didn't promote it that much, how much he agonized over not being able to win that race. But I knew deep down it meant a lot to him. And I think the way he celebrated and the way he carried himself that day pretty much proved how much he wanted to win it and how much it truly meant to him to win it.
I was 11 years old, but I will always remember Mike Joy's call then on CBS. 20 years of trying, 20 years of frustration. Dale Earnhardt will come to the caution flag to win the Daytona 500. And it always stays with me because it was such a cool moment.
Yeah, it was definitely, I think, a watershed moment for NASCAR. It's still talked about now, you know, even 21 years later. It was the 50th anniversary of NASCAR. You can't make this stuff up and write scripts to make things work out like they do. And again, going back to last Sunday with Denny Hamlin driving the 11 car with J.D. Gibbs' name on the car, you just can't, you know, Hollywood couldn't write a better script sometimes the way a race unfolds.
Larry, I appreciate the time as always, and love your work on Fox. It's good to talk to you, and we'll do it again soon.
No, we appreciate it. And again, we'll be on the air tomorrow on Fox with our pre-race show and the race. And, you know, hope the fans will tune in. I think you're going to really see some special racing here at Atlanta Motor Speedway. And we're excited to have this. This is our 19th year to be doing NASCAR on Fox, which is very hard to believe. And as I always tell people, I'd love for you to follow me on Twitter. At LarryMack28. That's at LarryMack28. I try to answer as many questions as I can. Now, if you're trying to pick a fight with me, I'm not the guy. I'm not going to argue with you on Twitter, but I love answering questions and interacting with fans. That's at LarryMack28.
Larry, thanks as always. Enjoy the race from Atlanta.
Thank you for having me, Chase.
The great Larry McReynolds from Fox NASCAR. Always enjoy having him on the show. And just a wealth of knowledge. And I wanted to get we had a driver, and now I wanted a crew chief as well, to discuss Atlanta, to discuss these new rules that they're going to have. Because, look, there's so many unknowns going into this weekend, and I think that's exciting. But I'm looking forward to it, looking forward to the race, and seeing what all is going to take place with this new rules package. Vegas has their odds to win this race, and I almost think that you have to... You know, they're basing a lot of what, you know, history, and you almost have to take that with a grain of salt. The odds-on favorite to win this weekend at Atlanta is, of course, Kevin Harvick. He is the defending winner of this race, 4.5 to 1 plus 450, if you look at it that way. So he's the favorite. He has won this race twice, or won there twice, I should say, going back to 2001 and then last year as well. Second favorite, Kyle Busch at 5.5 to 1. He won in 2008 and 2013. The third favorite, the defending Cup Series champion at 6.5 to 1, Joey Logano. His best finish there is second. So you got to go with one of those guys. And then Brad Keselowski, he won there in 2017, 8 to 1. And then Martin Truex Jr., and Kyle Larson are both 8.5 to 1. Best finish for Truex is third in 2013. Larson second in 2017. My pick, I am going to go with Brad Keselowski, 8 to 1. I like that. I think he had a strong showing at Daytona before he got caught up in an accident. And, you know, with new rules packages, things like that, you know, BK had something towards the end of last year. So I like what they're doing over there at Team Penske. So that is my pick. Like I said, we had a loaded show. We had Kurt Busch, Larry McReynolds, just some great analysis from those two guys. So that's going to do it. We'll come back at you next Friday afternoon on demand. And, of course, through the weekend, Saturday mornings at 7, kicking off the weekend, and then Sunday as well at 8 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Chase McCabe. Check out all of our podcasts on demand at thegamenashville.com. And tune in next week for Chasing Checkers on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.